Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
What's up, everybody? I'm Najee Adams.
And I'm Hunter Jacobs.
And you're listening to the Hoop Bowl Nets Podcast. We are back with another episode for you guys. I hope you're excited because we are excited. But before we get into everything, make sure you guys subscribe to the Hoop Bowl Nets podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Give it a download wherever you guys listen to your podcasts. Leave that 5-star rating and review on Apple Pods, and they will get right on the podcast. You can follow me at Najee Adams _. You can follow Hunter at Hunter _JKR on Twitter. And you can follow the pod at Hoop Bowl Nets. I gotta get in my own plug. If you rock with me, you can follow my podcast at Run It Up Pod, or just look up the Run It Up Podcast on Apple Pod or wherever you listen to podcasts, really Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it is. You can look up the Run It Up Pod, and my own podcast will come up. Last week I talked about Top Shot with LG Doucette. He's the host of The First Mint. So if you know anything about Top Shot, or if you want to get to know about Top Shot, you can check out my podcast. So yeah. Today we kind of want to touch on the Blake Griffin signing, what it means for the team, talk about the game versus the Knicks, whether or not Julius Randle's travel was actually a travel, their most recent game versus the Pacers, PJ Tucker to the Bucks, and then kind of just see where it goes from there. So without further ado, we'll just kind of get into it. Blake Griffin is a Brooklyn Net. He has been for about a week and a half now. Hunter, what was your initial reaction when the Nets signed Blake Griffin?
Well, as soon as it was found out that Griffin was parting ways with the Pistons, I think we knew that the Nets would be atop of that list. They had even asked Harden at one point after that about adding players to the squad, and Harden basically found a way to just directly go that it was Blake Griffin. Like, without naming him, like, you knew he was talking about Blake Griffin. And if he's able to fit the role that they're going to ask of him, I don't think it's a bad add. It's just, hopefully, the theories about him not playing as hard since he was in Detroit are accurate. Because if he's playing at that same level, it could harm them more than anything. But I don't think it's a bad signing.
Yeah, I was kind of on the same boat. Once he got released from the Pistons, I feel like the Nets were the front runners. I believe like right when he could be announced to be signed to a new team, like at 5 p.m. or whatever the actual deadline was, he was announced on the minute that he was going to the Nets.
I got the notification at 5:01.
Yeah, so it was probably pretty set in stone. I mean, after he said that KD had been recruiting him more than anything, which is actually pretty interesting to me. Because, KD's actually not playing right now, but he's still being active and recruiting guys to the Nets, which is kind of what you want to see out of your team leader. So that's great for the team and KD as a whole. It shows you kind of where his head's at. He knows he's going to be fine, come back, and still sees the Nets as a championship team, as he should. What I think Blake Griffin brings to the Nets, I think it's still up in the air. If he was just playing down, if he was just playing bad because the Pistons were bad, then I think that he could bring quite a lot to the Nets. But if he actually is just as bad as he was this season, then I think it could be a problem. He obviously is not much on the defensive end. But the Nets have been making that work all season long, and I don't think they're very worried about defense. When it comes to offense, not even offense, I think what Blake Griffin brings to the Nets is a playmaking big, which they don't really have. You know, they said that they want to bring him off the bench as a stretch big, but I think that more so kind of plays to him being able to run the offense. And not even run it, just facilitate an offense around with him as the primary ball handler for certain plays. They don't have a big right now, unless you count KD as a big, that can do that on the team. DeAndre Jordan can't do it. Nick Claxton can't do it. And that is about the extent of the Nets bigs.
Even if you count Jeff Green, he's not really a facilitator. Blake Griffin's passing has always been well above average for big men in the league. Like, multiple years with the Clippers and even with the start of his time in Detroit, he was averaging over 4 assists a game. So he has vision. So if he embraces that role of being a pass first big and can help them play some 5 out, sit in the corners or on the wing and shoot threes if Harden gets him that look, then it could be a perfect fit.
And not only that, but think about, so like, if the Nets are healthy, think about what Griffin facilitating an offense could look like, having Kyrie, Harden, and KD all off ball. Defenses would be absolutely, they would have no clue what to do, because their 3 best players, not a single one of them is touching the ball, and all 3 of them are on the court. So at a moment's notice, you could just kick it to Kyrie, kick it to Harden, kick it to KD, and it's wraps for any defense. So I think that will bring another layer to the Nets. But I wanted to ask you, what would our closing lineup be? Like, come playoff time, do we close with KD at the 5? Like, do we run out Kyrie, Harden, Jeff Green, or Kyrie, Harden, Bruce Brown, Blake Griffin, KD?
I'm not going to lie, there is a chance that Spencer Dinwiddie will be back at that time.
Oh, you are 100% right.
And if he's there, as of right now, I believe you would close out with Kyrie, Dinwiddie, Harden, KD, and Blake.
That's a tough, tough lineup.
And if the defense doesn't work out that way, I believe you would insert Claxton for Blake. But I do believe them closing with Kyrie, Dinwiddie, Harden, and KD, there's no team that has the defensive capabilities to stop that.
No, I'm with you. I didn't even take that into account, that Dinwiddie could be back, and you're 100% right. He definitely could be. So that could be an absolutely insane closing lineup for the Nets come playoff time. But I guess we'll have to wait and see what Spencer Dinwiddie's recovery process is looking like. But kind of moving on to that game against the New York Knicks, the Battle of New York. So in, like, obviously me and Hunter live in New York. This is a huge game every year, especially now that both teams are relatively good. You know, the Nets are obviously good. The Knicks, they are good, I guess you would say. Like, they're right at 500. I think they're like a game below 500 maybe. But this is the best the Knicks have been in a long time. It's the best the Nets have been in a long time. So things obviously in New York got a little lit. Did you, whenever these two teams play, do you ever have a team that you prefer to win? I always pick the Nets just because our friend Daniel's a Knicks fan and I like to see him not win, so.
Yeah, personally, it's I have one of those in every sport where it's like, I want my friend not to win. So it's like the Patriots. I will never in my life root for the Patriots because my friend is possibly the worst human being in the world whenever they win. So it's similar with the Knicks. Whenever they even win a game, I don't hear the end of how RJ Barrett is the next Michael Jordan, and he just has to be given time. It's like, I'd rather just see the Nets win because it's already expected. They don't really talk a lot. Just they do their business and keep it moving.
And so the Nets did indeed win. And so the Nets won 117-112. Things got hazy there at the end. We actually, Hunter included, we all watched the game in our little friend group. We watched the game on PlayStation. And so whenever there's rare games that we do that for. And so whenever those games do come, it's always a good time. The Knicks outscored the Nets in the second quarter and the first quarter. They outscored them by 5 in the first. Oh, that is a lie. The Knicks outscored the Nets in the fourth quarter by 7, which is what made the game so close. Outside of that, the Nets outscored them in the first, the second, and then they tied it up in the third at 29 apiece. Julius Randle is obviously very, very good at basketball. He's their primary facilitator and ball handler and scorer and defender. And he's just very good. And he's found his place on the Knicks. He played 41 minutes. He was 13 of 27 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, 5 turnovers. He had 33 points. The man was very, very good. Reggie Bullock actually, what came out of nowhere, 19 points on 5 of 10 shooting from deep. RJ Barrett, 23 on 6 of 14 from the field. He was flawless from the free throw line, 10 of 10. And then the rookie sensation, Emmanuel Quickly, 21 points and 4 of 12 from 3, 6 of 19 from the field. He shot the second most shots on the team behind Julius Randle. And, yeah, outside of that, no one really stands out. Alec Burks off the bench had 12 points, but he missed a very, very crucial three-pointer. Yeah,
I was going to ask you, why do you think it is that they went with Burks in that closing lineup?
I don't know. I guess just because he's a veteran and they might have trusted him to close out a game because he's, like I said, he's a vet. He's been in the league for a good little while. So they trusted him to be a closer for them and being their closing lineup. Obviously, that was the wrong mistake because he literally bricked a wide open three. That would have put the Nets up by one. That would have put the Knicks down by one or tied the game. Regardless, it would have made the score very, very close.
It was a very important shot and he just did not have it.
Not at all. Moving on to the Nets, James Harden has been absolutely incredible. My front runner for MVP, if Embiid, depending on how much time Embiid actually does miss, Harden is probably my MVP. 21
for me in the ladder right now.
Is Jokic second?
Yeah, I have Embiid then Jokic.
Yeah. For me, I have Embiid, Harden, Jokic. So, but regardless, either one of the three, whichever one of them wins, I'm fine with. They all deserve it. 21 points from Harden, 15-15, like his 9,000th triple-double since becoming a Net. 9 of 9 from the free throw line, 6 of 15 from the field. He was 0 of 5 from 3 and still had an impeccable game, played 40 minutes. This game was a back and forth game for the most part. Kyrie played incredibly tonight. That night, he was 13 of 18 from the field, 4 of 6 from 3, dropped 34, which was a team high and also a game high.
I wanted to ask you, what do you make of Bruce Brown only playing 7 minutes while Tyler Johnson had 16 and Shamet had 23?
I don't really make too much of it. I think that they just rotate people in and out based on the matchup. Cause if you look at their most recent game versus the Pacers, Bruce Brown started and played 24 minutes and Tyler Johnson, he didn't start, but he played 31 minutes. And then, but that was without Kyrie. So I guess we'll see. I would like to see what that looks like against the Pacers when they do have Kyrie. And then Landry Shamet played 25 minutes. I also think that the Nets are going to have to run this. They're trying to develop this lineup and these rotations now, but I feel like a lot of that's going to change once Blake Griffin and KD, well, once Blake Griffin gets integrated into it and KD gets reintegrated into it. So, I'm very interested to see what the Nets playoff rotation looks like, how deep they decide to go. Cause when you think about it, they could be like their starters, obviously 5 deep, Claxton 6 deep, Bruce Brown 7 deep, Tyler Johnson 8 deep, TLC 9 deep, Shamet 10 deep, Chioza and Reggie Perry.
Starters, that means one of Jeff Green or Blake Griffin is on the bench.
So they could be 10 or 11 deep. Like, so I'm interested to see how Steve Brown. I'm interested to see how Steve Nash tightens up the rotation come playoff time.
Well, also, do you think that Claxton deserves the reins to the center position?
I feel like he does, man. I feel like he's very versatile on the defensive end, and he's just a stud. As like he's not super versatile on the offensive end, but he gets the job done. He can do probably everything that DeAndre Jordan can do, and he's just a more versatile defender. So yeah, I get that he's younger, and they're trying to give DeAndre Jordan the benefit of the doubt, the veteran leadership role, and that's cool. But you start your best players, and right now, Nick Claxton is the best center on the Nets. So I believe he deserves a starting spot. And honestly, he's playing more minutes than DeAndre Jordan anyway, so you might as well just give him the spot. In the Knicks game, he didn't, but in the Pacers game, he did. So,
well, that could be their uptrend, noticing it. But going deep into my analytics, as always, Claxton's on-court numbers are some of the best that we've seen in a long time. And that's probably because he's only played 150 minutes on the season and 1844 that he didn't play. But in those 150 minutes, his net rating is plus 25.
Insane.
And his, when he's off the court, it's plus 4. So that's just because the Nets are good. But the 20-point difference in rating on off court is something we don't usually see. He has a near 23 PER. He shoots above 60% from the field. His win shares are going up. It's just, he makes me think why the Nets would even want another center, if we're being honest.
No, I'm with you. I just want to take the time out to say, this is not Nets related, but Anthony Edwards currently has 41 points. He's been going off lately. We're recording on a Thursday night, and the Timberwolves are playing the Suns. And, Anthony Edwards has 42 and Kat has 41, and the Timberwolves are winning. That's insane.
And also, sidebar with the on-off court numbers, DeAndre Jordan is plus 3.6 when he's on and plus 7.3 when he's off for a negative 3.7 overall rating.
Jesus. So yeah, I feel like the eye test proves that Claxton should be starting, and also the regular stats as well as the advanced and analytical stats prove that he should be starting. And so I feel like once the playoffs comes, Steve Nash might make that change, but he also couldn't.
Let me ask you, do you think the Nets should even go for a center, or that it will be overcrowding and begin to cause more problems?
I don't think they should go for it. I don't think they should necessarily gun for a center. Like, if someone like Andre Drummond gets bought out, just from a pure talent standpoint, I think they should give him a look, just because why would you not? I feel like it would be foolish to not give Andre Drummond a look. He can obviously provide for a lot of things that this team is missing. But if not, like if Andre Drummond doesn't get bought out, let's say he gets traded, let's say he wants to go to the Lakers, like I don't think that, or any other team, I don't think that the Nets should feel like they lost something, or that Nets fans should be hoping that we get another center. I think that right now, as currently constructed, we can still do a lot of damage to a lot of teams in the playoffs. The biggest challenges obviously come against bigs like Joel Embiid, against bigs like Bam Adebayo. If let's say we somehow play the Nuggets in the finals, you know, a big like Nikola Jokic would obviously do damage. But at the end of the day, the Nets have KD, who's unguardable, James Harden, who's unguardable, and Kyrie Irving, who's unguardable. So, I mean, a lot of the time, you're just purely outfiring those teams on offense. So, I don't think the Nets should be gunning for a center, but I think they should do their due diligence when it comes to the buyout market and seeing what bigs they could possibly pick up. In that game versus the Knicks, they shot in incredibly from the field, 57.9 from the field, 41.4 from three, outshot them in both areas. They did lose the free throw battle, but that's fine. And then they lost a turnover battle as well, almost doubled the Knicks in turnovers, and still managed to win. So that's a great win for the Nets. Obviously, it could have been a more dominant win, but it was a win for the Nets nonetheless.
What it came down to was the Nets were able to close the game. Mm-hmm. Where the Knicks couldn't. If they made their open shots at the end, they would have won the game.
And I know you wanted to ask me about the controversial Julius Randle travel, not travel. So let it fly.
Well, I know the rule and why it is a travel, but off the eye test, did you originally think it was a travel?
I did think it was a travel, but I think as we look at it, like as I look, like once you explained it to me, I was like, oh yeah, it's not a travel. So yeah, go ahead and explain it to everyone else, because once you explained it to me, I understood.
What Julius Randle did was a travel. He had a way out of it. If he dropped the ball before his feet hit the ground, it's a live ball because Kyrie touched it. Now, the only thing with that is he couldn't be the first one to pick it back up. So if he dropped it, he would have had to hope that one of his teammates could grab it before Kyrie would, which is probably impossible. So regardless, the Nets probably would have ended up with the ball there. But it was a travel because of what Randle did. He had full control and he landed with the ball. So even though Kyrie touched it as a travel, it was an up and down Nets ball. Randle wasn't happy, but his way out of it was dropping the ball. If he dropped the ball, it's a live ball.
And so, yeah, I think if he would have hit, had he hit a three, I would have put the Knicks down by one. And so, yeah, it would have definitely made a change in the game. But like Hunter said, he actually did travel, so he can't be that upset. And so, yeah, moving on to their matchup against, actually, I kind of want to talk about the PJ Tucker trade first before we go into their trade. I mean, their game against the Pacers. So, obviously, the Bucks have traded for PJ Tucker. He wanted to get out of that Rockets uniform ever since James Harden left, and he realized they are no longer a contender. The Rockets have lost something like 17 or 18 straight games, and yeah, they're horrible. And so, actually, wait, question: is Boogie signed to a team?
No.
So I wonder if he's gonna get picked up. That's a sidebar, but. Like I was saying, the Bucks acquired PJ Tucker, so he had wanted to go to a contender. The Bucks are obviously a contender. Do you think that the Nets should be worried now that PJ Tucker is on the Milwaukee Bucks?
I wouldn't say worried, but the end of game defensive lineup for the Bucks is pretty insane. If it winds up being matched up where Giannis is with KD. Middleton is with Harden, Holiday's with Kyrie, Tucker is probably with whatever center they roll out, and it's a pretty versatile defensive lineup. So I do believe that the Bucks might actually pose the biggest threat to them now, as opposed to the Sixers. I mean, I don't think they'll push them past six, but I do think the games will be more interesting versus the Bucks than against anyone else.
Yeah, I think that PJ Tucker is going to bring, like you said, I think that PJ Tucker is going to bring a very high level defense to a team that's already really good defensively and has a lot of great individual defenders. I think they can still kind of work on their team defense, and obviously PJ Tucker is going to help with that. A very skilled veteran who can defend. Probably the one through the five, we saw that the Rockets were playing him as their primary center. So he's used to guarding big men. He's guarded Anthony Davis.
You have failed to mention the best player in the deal, though.
Who is that?
Rodion's Kurucs.
Oh, yes. Rodion's Kurucs is now on the, wait, is he on the Bucks?
Yes, sir. He's now on the Bucks.
Rhodey on the Bucks. It's gonna be tough when we gotta see him in the playoffs.
I hope for his sake he gets some minutes.
I hope he gives us a cool 15 piece.
Hey, I wouldn't be mad. Let Rhodey come in as their sixth man and smoke the bench.
100%. And so yeah, I don't think it pushes the Bucks over the edge by any means, but I definitely think it was a very good pickup for them. I know a lot of teams have been trying to get PJ Tucker. Like the Heat also got Trevor Ariza. So a lot of the East teams are making moves to try and combat the Nets, and I think the Nets are gonna have quite a run through the playoffs and have some very difficult teams to overcome. They could see the Heat in the second round, and then they might see either the Bucks or the 76ers in the Eastern Conference Finals, and That's a gauntlet to run, and that's just the East. Then you got to get to the West in the finals, maybe see the Lakers, maybe see the Clippers, maybe the Jazz, the Nuggets, all very great teams. And the competition around the Nets is continuing to get better, but the Nets are still without the second best player in the entire universe at basketball, and they're still winning a crap ton of games, so they should be fine.
Moving. Have you seen a stat that when TLC plays less than 10 minutes, the Nets are undefeated?
That's insane. I mean, people really dislike TLC. Like, I didn't know that they did so much, but you, the thing you DM'd me that was like, what was it? It was a picture of, bro.
It was like a picture of a trash can.
And
Oh, no.
It was says how you say thank you in Spanish, and obviously it's gracias, but it was a picture of grass, a picture of sea, and a picture of TLC, bro. That is absolutely hilarious, bro.
Bro, I saw another one too. People really go crazy on him. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I don't think he should even sniff a playoff minute. Unless they're blowing a team out. It's bad. It's to that point. He's been a detriment.
Yeah, no, he's definitely been a detriment. But hopefully he turns things around. We'll see. Moving on to their game against the Pacers. They managed to win that one as well without Kyrie. This was a game that they could have chalked. They could have said, you know what? We don't have Kyrie. We don't have KD. This is a game we don't actually need to win. We could take a little break. But, no, the Nets came out with just James Harden as their only superstar on the court and absolutely, dominant. I don't want to say dominated because it was within 10 points. I think they won by nine. But Harden had a dominant performance. He was plus 25. He had 40 points, 15 assists, 10 rebounds, another triple-double, 13 of 27 from the field, 2 of 9 from 3. So in his last two games, he is what? 2 of 14 from 3 and still putting up great numbers, 12 of 14 from the free throw line. Nick Claxton actually played more minutes than DeAndre Jordan. He took 10 shots, which is 5 more than DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan went 5 of 5. Nick Claxton went 5 of 10. He had 11 points, 8 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 blocks. And D. Jordan had 10 points and 5 rebounds. And that was really the only crazy performances. Our guy, Old Reliable, Joe Harris, had 19, plus 22, 5 of 7 from 3. Man's a knockdown shooter, one of the best shooters in the league. And then...
We need to – well, before we move on, the Nets did turn the ball over again 16 times. I mean, they forced 16 in this game. But that's something they could tone down a little bit because that's probably the reason that these games have been so close. But I'm sure with KD coming back and Blake, things will change. And Landry Shamet actually drew the start in this one. Is this his first start of the season?
I want to say yes, but...
Yeah, I think so also, but I cannot confirm that. But that's interesting that they threw him into the starting lineup. They usually roll with Tyler Johnson in that spot.
I mean, Tyler Johnson played really well, played 31 minutes. He had 15 points, 4 rebounds, 4 of 9 from the field. Just looking at the Pacer stats... Malcolm Brogdon and Domantas Sabonis, as well as Caris LeVert. Shout out Caris. This is his first game against us.
Yes.
His first big game against us.
Caris.
Came back. Great to see him back on the court and balling. He will always have a special place in Nets fans' hearts. 6 of 16 from the field. Wasn't the revenge game I would bet he's hoping for, but he did have 19 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 steals. He's still getting his legs up under him. He was out for a good little while.
Do you think the Pacers are a team to watch out for as like an underdog to make a run in the playoffs when they have TJ Warren and Jeremy Lamb back and LaVert at full strength?
I think that they're a really deep team. I just don't fear them. Like, I
don't have any dominating takeover type of player.
No, and like, I fear the Sixers. I fear the Heat. I fear the Bucks. I don't fear the Pacers, you know? Like, they're not even positive. They're not even above 500 right now. But that's not to say they can't get over 500. I think they're a lock for the playoffs. They're one of the best eight teams in the league, in the East at least. And, yeah, I just don't think that they're that scary for some reason. Sabonis played well. He played 40 minutes, 8 of 11 from the field, 18 points, 11 assists, 11 rebounds. So dropped a nice little triple-double, had four steals and a block as well. He was one of the only players, he was the only player, one of three players to be, have a positive plus-minus on the Pacers. Malcolm Brogdon, 10 of 17, only one of five from three. He dropped 24. Like I said, Karras had 19. And then off the bench, TJ McConnell, the man who had 9,000 steals a couple of games ago, had 12 points on 6 of 9 shooting. And then Doug McDermott had 12 points as well on 4 of 7 from the field. And so, yeah, just another day in the office for the Nets. It was impressive because, like I said, this could have been a game that they just absolutely chalked and said, you know, we'll come back better next time. But no, they went full strength and happened to really be a Pacers team that's actually pretty good. And so their next game is coming up tomorrow, Friday, March 19th, against the Magic. Another game that they should win. And then another against Washington that they also should win. So the next big game on the Nets docket comes on Wednesday, March 14th, when they match up against the one-seeded Jazz. It could be a matchup of the one seeds, because right now I believe the Nets are the one seed in the East, and the Jazz are far and away the one seed in the West. So that could be a really cool matchup. Can't wait to see that one. We'll dive into that on another episode coming up. But yeah, outside of that, I know, Hunter, you just wanted to discuss the buyout market a little bit. Was there anything you wanted to touch on about that?
Well, I it's mainly whether or not the Nets should go for anybody on that market. And I think they should take a wait-and-see approach for how Blake Griffin fits in with them. Because let's say they jump the gun before Blake Griffin's fully adjusted and go and get DeMarcus Cousins or go and get a Drummond or an Aldridge even. And it turns out that they're way too overcrowded and it's like a too many mouths to feed situation, then it's going to wind up being the biggest mistake they made all season. So I don't know if they should even bother signing anybody else or hoping that Spencer Dinwiddie can get back and he can be that supporting bench player.
You know, I 100% hope that, the Nets can take that wait and see approach and come out on top, actually. And, but I guess, like, the Nets will have to wait and see as well. But that will do it for this episode of the Hoopball Nets podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed. Make sure you subscribe to the HBN podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Give it a download. Give it a 5-star rating and review. We will read all reviews on the pod. You can follow us on Twitter at Hoopball Nets. Myself, I am at Najee Adams _. And Hunter is at Hunter _JKR on Twitter. And yeah, that will do it for this episode. Let me give you your letter before we dip a P.
P. Paul Pierce, the truth.
PJ Washington was mine. And with that, we will talk to you guys next time.
This has been a Hoop Bowl presentation.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.